Did you miss us? Oh, you didn't notice we've been away. Welcome to the second eagerly awaited episode of Blue Talk, the attractions industry podcast from Blue Loop. I'm Owen Ralph, and in a special episode, I travelled to Blackpool to speak with three industry players from the famous British seaside resort.
Probably Blackpool is the only town that's anything like London in terms of its entertainment density. We've got the shows, we've got the rides, we've got the entertainment, we've got the F&B, we've got everything, but in a much smaller space.
We'll hear how Blackpool's future success relies on reconnecting with lapsed visitors from its past.
In the 70s, I came to Blackpool for the first time, and I didn't really come back again as a visitor after that.
We'll hear how the Pleasure Beach and other attractions are benefiting from a new resort pass designed to emulate that in Florida.
The whole Orlando operation is a very slick operation. Yeah. Customers might go for 2 weeks over there, will come here to Blackpool, and for a long weekend, 4 or 5 days, they can plan a visit exactly like that.
And we'll hear about plans for some of the new attractions coming in the next 18 months.
We're planning a new ride at the moment. Will hopefully be one of the most exciting rides in the world.
Oh, and there'll also be a bit of blatant self-promotion with Blue Loop's Charlie Reed later. But first, let me take you to Blackpool Pleasure Beach's White Tower restaurant, where we had our chat recently overlooking the resort's famous promenade. Alan Cavill is Blackpool Council's Director of Place, or Assistant Chief Executive to you and me. Alan has served in the role for the past 5 years, and in a town so heavily reliant on tourism, spends a lot of his time working with the resort's attraction operators. Alan, how much of your working day and week is spent dealing with tourism issues, and do you wish it could be more?
As your listeners are probably aware, local authorities are not in the best place at the moment in terms of funding, so we all wish it could be more we spent on tourism, including my time. But more than half my working week is spent thinking about tourism, wondering what everybody's doing, and hoping that loads of people are going to come to Blackpool.
And you're in the unusual position of being landlord to some attractions and also running or owning some of them yourself. How does the council decide, what role to take on that?
Well, I mean, I think we are very realistic and know that the council isn't necessarily the best agency to run everything. We're pretty good at some things and not so good at others. So whilst we own the tower, we know that Merlin are far better at running attractions than we are, and that's why that they're in place at the tower. We also own the zoo, and that's run by somebody else. We own the sandcastle, and that's run by an arm's length company, but again by a seasoned professional. Who looks after the water park, and the winter gardens is the same sort of thing. So we own a lot of the town's crown jewels, with the notable exception of the Pleasure Beach, of course.
And just tell us about some of the improvements that you made to the resort. I mean, the most obvious is the promenade work, isn't it? But there's a lot of more things going on behind the scenes, I guess.
Gosh, yeah. I mean, we're responsible for the infrastructure for the town as well. So, over £100 million on a new tramway to move people around between the attractions is really important. But we have concentrated on the seafront. It's Blackpool's shopfront. And I think it's really important that it looks great, and we believe it does now. But we've invested £65 million in the what we call the leisure assets, which is the tower and the winter gardens, and we've helped to improve the shopping centre. That's had probably about £70-75 million spent on it, and we've also tried to create an area around the station which is much nicer than the welcome that previously existed. And of course, the car parks coming into town have had a lot of money spent on them as well. So. All in all, over the last 5 or 6 years, we've spent about £450 million on improving the resort's infrastructure. Going forward, I think we're looking to try and improve the offer in terms of food, beverage and accommodation. And I think that's really important. Now we've done the sort of basic infrastructure, so we're looking at bringing a number of hotels into the town that provide the sort of 3, 4 and 5 star product, including one of our own at 4 star level. We're looking at working with a number of people to bring in food chains that haven't been here before, like things like Las Iguanas, Ed's Easy Diner, Prezzo, World Buffet. All of these things are coming to town to add to the offer we've already got. We're also looking at extending the tramway so people can arrive at the station, get on a tram and go to wherever it is on the promenade they need to go. And perhaps our biggest single project at the moment is a museum for Blackpool, which of course will be very different from any other kind of museum that you've ever been to.
One of the things that was always Blackpool's big one of the big tourist attractions was the trams. You know, you have the vintage trams. Now you've got much more modern trams, like you might see in a city somewhere. Have they still got the same tourist appeal, do you think?
Well, of course, we haven't got rid of the old trams.
No, you
can still use those. In actual fact, I was looking at the figures yesterday. Strangely enough, I'm not a geek, but we used to have about 2.2 million people a year using the trams before we had the new trams. It's now about 4.5 million, so I think that answers your question.
Yeah.
They're roughly twice as popular as the old ones.
And they're a lot they're more accessible, they're more comfortable.
They're more accessible. The journey time is under an hour from end to end. It used to be nearly 2 hours, so you know it's a people-moving system now as opposed to a sort of vintage ride.
Now, after almost 120 years, the Pleasure Beach is still the attraction that brings many people to Blackpool, and alongside the tower, the one that is perhaps most commonly associated with the resort's name. Working alongside his sister Amanda, Nick Thompson is the amusement park's deputy managing director and the great-grandson of founder William G. Bean. Quite a legacy, eh, Nick?
It's a huge legacy and a huge responsibility, but also great fun as well.
Like a lot of the businesses in Blackpool, yours is a family business. But you've had various corporate players. First Leisure was a big group back in the day, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And now you've got both Merlin and Parkus Reunidos in town, Parkus Reunidos running the zoo.
Well, the worldwide industry we know very well. And so, you know, we've known the people from Merlin for years. We've known the Park Reunidos people for years. So we've always worked closely with them before they were in the town.
Yeah.
But they're great people to work with. And as Alan said, you know, they're very good at operating what they do, and, you know, we all work together.
The Pleasure Beach is also known for its classic attractions such as the Grand National, the Big Dipper, Steeplechase, River Caves. But in the past few years, this season, you've just put in the Red Hour Skyforce, a new thrill ride, and some branded attractions, Nickelodeon Land and the Wallace and Gromit Thrill-O-Matic Dart Ride. How do you balance that mix of old and new?
Well, the old attractions, you know, the Flying Machine was built in 1904, before most people, just as flight was created. And it's sort of become part of the infrastructure of the park, and it's just a fantastic ride. And, you know, over the years, rides have come and gone, and particularly with some of the nostalgic rides, if you like. Yeah. When we went introduced the wristband, pay one price, a lot of the traditional rides gained huge popularity again. And so against the Big One and the Fly Machines, they're all as popular as each other, and we know which are the nostalgic ones to keep now, and we're going to keep them for, you know, forever, hopefully. It was interesting a few years ago when we got we built Nickelodeon Land, because we mainly demolished the whole kiddies park that was.
Yeah.
And it was quite funny because there are a few nostalgic rides there, but of less importance. But it was quite a few of the grandparents, things like they remembered going on the rides in the kiddies park.
Yeah. I used to like Magic Mountain, actually.
Yeah,
remember that, yeah.
I know. And but we had to make a decision, and bringing in Nickelodeon and the way the park looks now, it was a major shift change for the company, because we hadn't invested in family attractions for a while. So that was about an £8 million investment there on putting in Nickelodeon Land. And although we did get through a few of the smaller nostalgic attractions like Magic Mountain, the increase in business when we put in the new Nickelodeon was fantastic. And it was a big shift change in everything. And building, taking almost a quarter of the park and flattening it and rebuilding to create what is a beautiful part of the park now.
And obviously IP-based branded attractions now are big in the UK, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, friends of mine who have Drayton Manor, I watched that with huge interest as Thomas Land opened. And, you know, seeing the success of that sort of then started to look at what other brands were around. And another friend of ours in Poulton's Park, where they have Peppa Pig Land, they opened the same year as we did. But at the time, I was thinking, you know, that what brands have the longevity? Because we don't, when we invest in something, we try and keep, you know, like the Flying Machine built in 1904, we sort of don't plan that it's going to be demolished in a few years. So Nickelodeon being a TV-based brand, they can bring in new brands as they develop. For example, like when the Turtles was a new brand they bought, so we instantly can add that to our business. So Nickelodeon will grow and grow and grow as the brand grows.
And is that the focus now, family attractions? Would you do more roller coasters?
Nickelodeon was very conscious that we hadn't invested in family attractions for a while, and our research had told us that we needed to look at that. So it was the right decision to do, because, you know, our family attendance has increased dramatically. And following that, we did Wallace and Gromit, which was working with Nick Parks, the creator, was a fantastic...
Who's local to here, isn't he?
Yeah, he grew up in Preston, and his family are all still around there. But that was a great synergy with us, because, you know, it's a Lancashire-based theme. And, again, it was a family attraction. And now we're working on... We're sort of very much focused that we brought in the Red Arrows ride, which is, again, moving towards the White Knuckle experiences. And following on from that, we have plans for another exciting ride in the next few years.
Another sort of thrill ride. Ian Hawkins is head of Merlin Entertainment's Blackpool cluster. That cluster being Madame Tussauds Blackpool, Sea Life and various attractions in and around Blackpool Tower, including the Blackpool Tower Eye Observation Deck, 4D Experience and Blackpool Tower Dungeon. And fittingly enough for somebody who works at the tower, he's also the tallest man in the room. Ian, as a Scotsman, you must have visited Blackpool quite a lot for family holidays when you were a kid.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember coming to Blackpool for the first time in the 70s, and like many people that come to Blackpool, that memory of, or the game that you play on the M55, the first one to spot the tower, is one I remember playing back in the 70s. So it was always exciting for me to be able to come back to Blackpool and actually run that iconic attraction.
And you'd been with Merlin many years, and indeed Merlin's been in the town for many years with Sea Life. But in 2001, you really expanded that portfolio of attractions with some of the ones we've discussed. Just tell us what you did, and also the deal with the council, because you don't own all those attractions outright, do you?
No, absolutely. Blackpool is very different in terms of Merlin and its global portfolio, in that we almost work as a JV, if you like, a joint venture with the council. The council were able to bring in European funding to be able to purchase some of the key buildings, including the Winter Gardens and, of course, the tower. And that allowed us to be able to then offer our globally recognised brands and our management teams to be able to come in and help the council achieve their vision, which was basically to take Blackpool into a new era. I say a new era, but an era that basically focused very much on bringing the families back to the resort.
And how did you choose that mix of attractions? Many of these are your established midway attractions, as you call them, the sort of short-stay visits. How did you choose those? You've not put, for example, a Legoland Discovery Centre in there, have you?
No, there's a Legoland Discovery Centre at Manchester's Trafford Centre, which is the reason that didn't come here at that time. But Blackpool is the biggest, what we call, cluster of attractions that Merlin operates, with the most variety of brands that we operate. So for me, that was a fantastic thing to be able to come in and take on. But obviously, we've retained some of the other attractions that sit within the cluster, so the likes of the Blackpool Tower Ballroom, and obviously we've rebranded the tower itself, so it becomes one of our eye observation experiences as well.
And just tell us about that, because that was interesting. Was it the first time you'd used the eye not for an observation wheel?
Yes, it is. It is a bit complicated because all of the graphics that we had for eyes at that time were circular, but we have since taken on more observation experiences. So, for instance, is the Sydney Tower, the eye there, basically, it's about providing a fantastic experience, a unique experience, and that's certainly what the tower provides. But the one other thing that we added, other than modernisation of the tower itself, was to provide a 4D film, which even today still makes the hairs on the back of my neck go up when I watch it. It makes you very proud to be part of Blackpool, in fact, and it really nails down what Blackpool's all about, from its history right through to its future.
Ian, we'll start with you. Blackpool's back. Where did it go? I think we should explain before we talk on this. This is actually a campaign, isn't it, that Merlin's backing at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. We, with the council, set up a campaign, a marketing repositioning destinational campaign, which was really focused on bringing back the families to the resort. And it was really about asking families to reappraise Blackpool through the eyes of a child, to basically come back to our resort, have a look at all the various changes, the investment, the global brands that have arrived, the hotels and the restaurants, etc., that have come in over the last 5 years, the additions that Nick talked about, and come back and see for yourself. Because, like I've said to you, in the 70s I came to Blackpool for the first time, and I didn't really come back again as a visitor after that.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people have that same story, and so it was really about getting people to reappraise, understand that huge changes have taken place in the resort, and that's an exciting place to be.
And is that the problem, Alan? That it's not so much that you're trying to find new visitors, it's getting those people to re-engage them.
Well, yes, and I think a survey, I think less than about 7 or 8 years ago, showed that nearly 70% of the people of the UK have been to Blackpool at some time or other. So, you know, we don't only want to aim at the 30% who've never been. And I think we were very keen to show people who were probably lapsed visitors, partly because of their age and partly because they came as kids and they haven't chosen to come as adults. That actually Blackpool was still here, and we had some exciting new things to offer.
Nick, you've always been here, you've never been away. How have you seen business change over the past 10, 20 years?
Well, there's been a slight shift in the sense that the staying visitors are still very popular in the town, but they're staying for shorter time. So yeah. It's mainly day visitors and short stay visitors. So that's been the major change. But just going on what you were talking to Alan about with lapsed visitors, it was interesting. 15 years ago, when we did our documentary, which was, I think, an 8-part series.
Yeah, it was a fly on the wall thing.
Yeah,
wasn't it?
It was one in the early days of fly on the wall. Yeah. It was amazing that summer when we reopened afterwards how many lapsed visitors came back. I mean, I'm talking lapsed visitors from 20 years ago or something.
Yeah,
it brought in a lot of new visitors. Sorry, lapsed visitors. And they were just amazed at seeing some of the changes. And, you know, as you say, 70% of the population have been to the town, and we just need to encourage them to come back now because a lot more has changed.
Yeah.
And that's really what Blackpool's Back was all about. It was sort of a four-pronged attack, which was to introduce a television advert from the Midlands right up to Edinburgh and Glasgow. There was an annual PR campaign, which was, again, to get the profile of Blackpool outside Blackpool, if you like. There was a digital campaign, and we worked with the council with regards to putting a new face on the Visit Blackpool website to try and get people to understand that there's a one-stop shop, if you like, that you could go to that one site and you could book your tickets from there. And we've had some fantastic feedback over the last year. We've had a 67% increase in website visits, and adding to what Nick was just saying there, we've actually seen an increase of 300,000 overnight stays throughout 2014, and that's obviously continuing into this year, which is really good.
I think one of the things that's clear, certainly from the attraction operators we've got around the table today, is that the Blackpool's a family resort, isn't it?
You know? Absolutely.
There was famously a bid for a super casino some years ago, which failed, but Blackpool didn't win it, but nobody did in the end due to a change in regulations. If you had won the casino resort, what do you think it would have done? Would it damage the resort's image?
I got involved in that from the very beginning, and I think the process went on for about 10 years nearly. Mm. It was a long, long time. And Alan will correct me if I'm wrong, but the idea, casino was basically the catalyst for change. It wasn't all about a casino. Yeah. So personally being involved in it, we were very much in favour of it as just making a catalyst for change in the town, but also, you know, without a doubt, still concentrating on families. I've taken my family to Vegas a few times, and they've thoroughly enjoyed it without the gambling.
Yeah.
And it, you know, that's how I feel about it, that it wouldn't have.
Yeah, just to put some numbers on that, the key development, which would have been sort of behind the Sea Life Centre, funnily enough, was a major entertainment complex, which of some 4 million plus square feet, of which 50,000 square feet would have been a casino.
Yeah.
So, you know, in percentage terms, the casino was tiny.
Yes, yeah.
But it brought a catalyst, and because the casino license would be lucrative, effectively, somebody would buy that casino license for a fairly large amount of money.
Yeah.
And that would be reinvested into the town.
I think the original reason, I think, because it was started by... the idea was an idea of, I think, Trevor Hemmings.
Yeah.
And it was about having a big conference centre. And that was how the casino idea happened.
Yeah.
So it was a shame, but I think, you know, the town, as Alan says, you know, the ideas that were outside the casino brief are slowly beginning to happen.
Yeah.
And as I said, it was a catalyst. So although we never got the catalyst...
you did get the catalyst, actually. You didn't get the casino, perhaps.
Yeah. Everything else is slowly happening, but not as fast as we'd like, but it is happening.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, the only site that's not come forward out of the sort of six key areas that were in the master plan that had a casino in it is the casino site, which is the central station site. All the others have actually happened.
And it's easy for me to sit here, because I kind of came in here as the plan B, if there was ever such a thing, and say, well, it was absolutely the right thing to do, absolutely. But obviously, I think that what's happened over the last 5 years has been tremendous for the resort, and sitting here now, when I first arrived at the White Tower this morning, we were looking outside and looking down the promenade with Nick, and the tower was just poking out of the mist. It looked absolutely fantastic this morning, and it, you know, I can see the sandcastle across the road here, and it, you know, there is a balanced portfolio, I think, across this resort.
Yeah.
You know, there is something for everybody in this resort.
Absolutely.
And it's kind of weatherproofed itself, and perhaps other resorts in the UK don't have that ability.
Yeah.
I'm quite proud of what we've actually achieved in the last 5 years.
Which, let's be honest, in the UK you need to be weatherproof, don't you?
Yeah.
Yes, quite.
Blackpool also has an image of this for stag parties and, you know, maybe not so family entertainment. That obviously is an important market for you, isn't it? But are there enough family attractions open round the clock in the evening?
Yeah, I mean, it's something we were very aware of before we started this work, that that in fact, both in from a year-round and a clock-round approach, we didn't have things that that people could come to all the time, and you know, hence Merlin and indeed the Winter Gardens are now open 364 days a year, and that feels very different, and means that people can come to Blackpool and know there's something to do all the time. Opening in the evening is something that we're still working on, and we have seen dramatic improvements in the F&B offer in the town, and indeed, you know, the sort of opportunities that Pleasure Beach run for night riding and so on and so forth have meant that we do an awful lot more after sort of 5 o'clock.
And
as Ina's pointed out, you know, we've seen the results of that in that we had 300,000 more overnight stays last year than we had, in 2013. So, you know, that would suggest that people are wanting to stay over. And perhaps the biggest single thing that I think we did last year was we decided to pitch in and run summer shows again. So we had Mamma Mia for 12 weeks last year. We had Cats for 8 weeks this year. And 105,000 people came to see Mamma Mia, of which something like 70% were not from the local area.
Interesting. Nick, you used to open a lot later in the evenings on the Pleasure Beach, didn't you? You still do during the Illuminations, obviously. Why have you changed that calendar? Is that just the way the market's changed?
Well, as Alan says, we've been reintroducing night riding, which are certain events during the year, and we're looking at doing more events. I mean, next week we've got a Ministry of Sound event, so the evening style events or evening opening is going to revolve more around events. When we introduced the wristband, people plan the day like they do going to other theme parks. They're generally arriving earlier, and our average length of stay on the park is between 6 and 7 hours at the moment from the research we've done this year, which is a huge amount of time. And occasionally, you know, we do extend later, but people are used to it now, and they do leave at the time because they know they've planned the visit. You know, over 65-70% of our visitors are booking online, and it's all planned as a visit. So, and there is plenty to do when we close. I mean, the piers, for example, people will take advantage of the other entertainment that is around. Yeah. And we've got shows that run into the night. Stag Party has been coming to Blackpool for forever and a day, and, you know, we've seen them on the park. But, you know, they, compared to the amount of visitors that are in the town in any one day, they sort of fade into insignificance. And, you know, they have they're coming to have fun like anyone else.
Have any of you seen the visitor demographic change over the past 5-10 years?
Absolutely. Yeah. With Nickelodeon, the demographics towards more families has dramatically improved. I don't know with you, Ian, but...
Oh, no, absolutely. That's what my attractions are all about, really. But I think we've also seen some of the socio-demographic change with regards to more C1s coming into the town. And basically those individuals with more disposable income, and I think that's key for the future of Blackpool as well.
And how do you go after those, I don't know if higher spenders is the word, but how do you go after that different market without abandoning the Kiss Me Quick image, which is obviously is what the resort thrives on, and... I think some other resorts would still kill to be Blackpool, wouldn't they?
Well, I mean, I guess it's about quality, and that's what everything that we've been trying to do, because quality doesn't alienate anybody. You know, you know, if you look at Disney, Disney will have a demographic that's, you know, from A to E, and everybody goes, and that's because it's a quality product. And the same thing applies here, that we've been trying to introduce things that people will enjoy that are high quality. I mean, something like a comedy carpet, which is a free to look at exhibit on the promenade, amuses people from 4 years old to 84 years old, and everybody in the financial demographic as well. It's about finding those levelers, really, that mean that it doesn't alienate anybody.
And Nick, you mentioned that maybe the length of stay isn't as long as it used to be, but is it slowly getting longer?
It is. I mean, I don't think, it's unlikely that Blackpool return to the place that people take their two-week summer holiday.
But it used to sort of be people came during the Mills holidays and things like that.
That's right.
And,
weeks.
And strangely, they still do. You know, we do still have a Glasgow fair where, you know, half of Glasgow empties into Blackpool for a few weeks.
Mini Glasgow.
But they'll probably come for 3 or 4 days, not for 2 weeks. And I think the town has changed to reflect that. As I said before, we do have an increase in overnight stays, but the length of stay, as Nick's already said, is the average length of stay is about 2.4 days compared to 20 years ago, and it was more like 5 days. So, the numbers of people haven't fallen, but the length of time they're staying has.
And Ian mentioned that people come sort of from the Midlands up to Scotland. What about overseas visitors?
We have quite a large Irish market, and that is overseas, and it is a Eurozone, and that's probably our biggest foreign market. I think we do find that we are on the trail, if you like, whether Blackpool attracts specifically overseas visitors to come to Blackpool is another question, but we do find Japanese tourists taking pictures of strange things in Blackpool who are on their way to Scotland or the Lake District or something, and that's something we can really build on, I think.
And it's still hard to pull a lot of foreign tourists out of London, isn't it?
Absolutely it is, and I think I think the interesting thing there is that probably Blackpool is the only town that's anything like London in terms of its entertainment density. I think that's a huge selling point that we can really work on, because actually it's actually a bit easier to get round than London is, and we've got the shows, we've got the rides, we've got the entertainment, we've got the F&B, we've got everything, but in a much smaller space. And I don't think any other city or town in the country, other than London, could actually argue for that sort of density of entertainment in one location.
I think the tourists that all come into London, they're not just staying in London. There's been sort of a long history of, you know, England or Britain selling itself, you know, with pretty villages and stately homes. And, you know, the tourist trail from London heads towards Oxford or Cambridge. It goes up to York, Bath, but it's all the same, and then up to Scotland, and it's all the same. And I think, you know, Blackpool offers sort of a respite for it all. It's like, this could be a fun destination.
No, we've actually had a Merlin delegation from our Shanghai attractions. We have a Sea Life Centre and a Madame Tussauds in Shanghai, and they were here this week, and you absolutely nailed it. They were sort of walking around with their, you know, I just couldn't believe it, flabbergasted by such a small resort having this huge variety of attractions.
Well, our most famous international visitor, of course, is Tim Burton, who's officially declared that the Pleasure Beach is his favourite attraction in the world, I think, hasn't he? So,
and he turned the illuminations on.
And he turned the lights on. But he's made, I think, 5 visits to the resort this year. Only one to make a film, and the other 4 for fun. So that was, you know, that's amazing.
Blackpool's bed and breakfast guest houses are famous, infamous, and so are some of the landladies that run them. Is the accommodation offer generally good enough across the board, do you think?
It's getting there. Yeah. I mean, it's a journey. I'm not trying to say that, that there aren't any B&Bs out there that aren't quite operating at the standard that we would like them to, but it's a lot better than it was. We've got, you know, back at the turn of the century, we had, I think, 56 accredited premises in terms of accommodation. Today, we've got nearly 400. But there's still over 1,500 premises operating in the accommodation market. But what we have seen is a real improvement in the high-end stuff. So there's some fantastic boutique B&Bs out there, probably about 10 or 12 of them now, that are really putting together a great offer. And we've seen probably a threefold increase in the number of 3- and 4-star rooms in the town.
And Nick, you put in about 10 years ago now, the Big Blue Hotel. That's been a great success for you, hasn't it?
Oh, it's been a fantastic success. And, in recent years, it's been one of our best investments ever, just in a way, which we'd thought of it about 50 years ago. And we'd have a lot more hotels by now. And we're still thinking of building more hotels. Yeah. And just chatting to Alan earlier, there are plans for new hotels in the town, so which is great news. And it's all sort of moving in the right direction. And you know, that like a lot of parks around the world, like Merlin operate quite a few hotels now, and it's providing great family stays and improving the bed stock within the town as well. So we're very proud of it, and it's doing extremely well.
If I could just ask you, just as attraction operators, what one new improvement or infrastructure project made by the council in the last 5 years do you think has been most positive, either for you as a business or for the resort as a whole? And we'll start with you, Ian.
Well, I'm obviously biased, so I'm going to say the fact that we took over the iconic Blackpool Tower. But I'm not going to cop out. My answer really is to do with the people that work within Blackpool. And the council were able to get some funding, government funding, to be able to set up the Blackpool Tourism Academy. Mm. And over the last couple of years, that has been fantastic in allowing accommodation sector attractions to be able to send their staff on training courses specifically set to improve those attractions, those businesses.
Because people go to Orlando, they go to Dubai, and they compare it to these places, I guess, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Getting people to talk about how wonderful the service was is something that Merlin spends, I'm sure Pleasure Beach spends, a lot of time looking at, and it's absolutely critical. It can make or break somebody's visit to the resort.
And Nick, what would you say?
I mean, I agree completely with Ian, and we've invested heavily in the same thing, and, you know, doing more so with our staff here as well, and run a lot more mystery shoppers. And, you know, the level of the quality of staff and the training has improved dramatically. But I'm going to be more predictable, and I'm, you know, the whole promenade, which has been completely changed over recent years, is now, you know, is amazing, and a great place to walk and be. And you know, and it's also brought in events that happen on it, which was all designed in by Alan's team. And it, you know, the promenade is a sort of the catalyst for change, I think.
What would you like to see happen?
You know, I've mentioned a couple of times, you know, because you said the casinos never happened.
Yeah.
But I mean, it was Blackpool's idea. I'm not saying that would be what it was always planned to be, but it, you know, to have a super casino would still be good. But
yeah,
you know, it's not as priority as we once thought it was.
We talked earlier about the illuminations. Some of your other colleagues in the industry that must be winding down for the winter now must be quite envious of them. Do you think they would work anywhere else? And what do you?
No, definitely yeah. not. They would never work anywhere else. But I think on that, you know, with our people around the country, you know, years ago, you know, they did have that issue with the rest of the resort sort of around the country winding down. But now, in particular, the half term is, you know, they don't just come to Blackpool. They come, you know, there's more competition for the October half term, and you know, the colleagues around the country do very well during that period. And with the popularity of Halloween now, you know, Blackpool can't sort of rest on its laurels that we've just got the illuminations.
Yeah.
We have to sort of compete against the other people doing big Halloween events now, which last over, it can be stretched out over weeks. So,
because we should say the illuminations run basically September to November, early November, which at one time would have been really late for a lot of people.
Yeah, there was no competition to the illuminations, but there are bits and bobs of competition coming in, which we have to be aware of and adapt to. And we're developing more events around Halloween, and the illuminations are improving every year. So it's something we are aware of, and I think the town is as well.
Blackpool being back is, for me, about being the number one seaside resort in the UK.
Yeah.
And as Nick quite rightly says, there are a number of resorts, or competitors, if you want to call them, who are improving their game, similar to we're trying to improve our game here. And we've got to keep ahead of that. I think one of the key points for Blackpool, its unique selling point, is the illuminations. And what that means is that we're very good here at extending our shoulder months, whereas a lot of resorts have seen sort of a quieter September, October through to half term. It's one of the busiest times of the year for Blackpool.
I mean, a few places have tried and failed in the past. One or two places are doing lighting based events.
Yeah.
Everybody else will be doing something for 1 or 2 weeks because you know the investment required to keep the illuminations on is huge. Let alone to build them in the first place.
Because it's a free show, isn't it?
Indeed, it is. You know, Ian and Nick are right. We can't rest on our laurels. We do have to make sure that the product that we offer is new and different as well, because a lot of the illuminations it feels like what you saw as a kid. It's not actually, but I mean, it's similar to what you saw as a kid. But we've just introduced this year a light pool, which is using something called architectural mapping, which makes the tower do pretty weird things at night time. the tower building especially, people will have seen you know, buildings moving and so on and so forth, and it's that kind of projection. Again, this is trying to get people to get out of their cars and stand and watch something, and it's working. You know, we have 300-500 people in a show, and we run the show about 3 or 4 times a night, stood on the comedy carpet watching that show. So it's, we do have to keep thinking and keep moving.
Do you think you've done enough to keep track of sort of recent technology? When I was a kid, I remember there used to be a laser on the end of each pier, which at the time seemed amazing. Now you can do all sorts of lasers. You can do multimedia spectaculars. You know, is Lightpool... Should you have done something like that a bit earlier, perhaps?
Possibly, but, you know, it's a question of money. I mean, Lightpool's costing something like £2 million to install and run, it's not something you can do every year, but it does mean we brought in some new technology. There is a lot of new technology in the illuminations anyway. For those who are interested, the lights cost something like 25% of what they used to cost in terms of electricity, because we use
LEDs.
There's quite a lot of tech behind the scenes as well.
Now, looking out the window here, we can see the tower on the distance. And between here and the tower, There's also two piers and another pier just beyond that. It's probably one set of attractions we've not talked about yet. Peter Sedgwick, who runs the rides on the pier and owned North Pier this year, took ownership of all three piers. If you own the piers, or what advice would you offer him? What would you like to see happen to the piers?
Well, I mean, I think first and foremost, they are you know, very much part of Blackpool, and we know that Peter will look after them and make them better. But I think also differentiating the products on each pier is very important, and making sure that we offer something a little bit different on each of those, and that they add to the resort's attractions. What is a resort? It's a collection of attractions, and we know that Peter can make a certain offer, and that offer can be very good, and we wish him well with the two new piers he's brought into.
I mean, I recently was in Los Angeles, and Santa Monica has a very famous pier there, and it's almost become an icon of Los Angeles and Santa Monica. Well, Santa Monica, it is their attraction. And, you know, that's definitely worth a visit to see, you know, what could be done. And it's not, it is still very much a traditional pier.
Yeah.
But it, with a modern twist on it, and still keeping tradition. And it's a fantastic thing if we could emulate that.
Yes.
As one of the attractions, but I think, as Alan says, you know, differentiation between them would also help.
Yeah, because so they've all got rides on them, haven't they? But the North Pier's got less rides and traditionally seen as the sort of the more laid-back pier, isn't it?
Well, yeah, North Pier's actually listed, so you can't put rides on it.
Yeah,
I think one of the things that Peter will provide is TLC, basically, and will give the piers a future, because as we've all said, you know, the likes of the Pleasure Beach and the Tower, iconic parts of the jigsaw of this resort, but those three piers are as well, so it's important they have a future.
Is it something Merlin would have considered, Ian?
No.
Take on the piers? No. Alan, just again talking about a few other attractions for people that aren't here today, probably two of the biggest ones are the Sandcastle and the Zoo. Mm-hmm. Just explain, you said you don't run those, but you do own them. Yeah,
that's right, but we own both. In the case of the Zoo, it's Parkwes who run it, and they do a very good job. It's one of their best performing attractions. They put in something new every year. Penguins and I think a few other things have come in recently. A wolf compound. The difference between that and the Sandcastle is that we own that, but the company that runs it is also owned by the council.
And the Sandcastle, we should say, is an indoor water park. It is.
Yeah. It's Europe's biggest indoor water park, and it's got some really exciting stuff in there. And the investment that goes into there is council investment, but it's done by a team of professionals who are water park professionals. You know, it's about horses for courses. You know, we did run the Zoo and we didn't do a terrific job of it, and we've handed that over to Parkers, who have done a terrific job of it.
Yeah.
And we actually had the Sandcastle out with a third party operator, and that wasn't very good, and we brought it in house, and that's doing very well. So it's
there's been a lot of investment in the past few years, hasn't there?
Absolutely, but we get nearly 400,000 visits to the Sandcastle a year, and to be honest, we're at a point now where I'm not sure we could get many more into it, especially during the peak parts of the season.
The one attraction, which it might not seem an attraction, but before we started recording today, you were very animated about it, is a new pub across the road, the Velvet Coaster, named after an old attraction on the Pleasure Beach, isn't it, Nick?
Yeah.
Why is a pub such an attraction? Maybe for people that can't see it, obviously people listening to the podcast.
I think, you know, Witherspoons, who own it, have, you know, they bought an old building and have completely renovated
it. It was an old arcade building,
yeah,
wasn't it?
And spent, you know, a fortune on it and built a fantastic business.
Yeah.
You know, it looks great inside and out. It's got great architectural features on the roof. It's got outside space for seating on all levels, you know, and it's just the sort of investment that Blackpool needs, you know, and it's a quality operation, and huge investment they put in it.
Yeah.
You know, they haven't tried to do it quickly and, you know, take money out of Blackpool as fast as they can. They're in there for the long haul with that investment.
One of the things you've introduced in recent years to unite all the different attractions is the Blackpool Resort Pass, a sort of combination ticket that combines all the Merlin attractions, the Pleasure Beach, and then this sort of add-ons, isn't there, Alan? Mm-hmm. You can put the zoo, the sandcastle on there. Just tell us briefly about that and who's involved.
There's I think 11 attractions on the larger pass, and it's the smaller pass is actually, as you say, just Merlin and the Pleasure Beach, and we introduced it because we felt that that was something that people wanted to do in terms of planning their visit to the resort, and of course because it represents very good value in terms of buying in early, 50 odd quid for the most of the Merlin and the Pleasure Beach attractions together is a really good deal. We have seen growth in that over the years, and we've just revamped it this year. It was a pretty paper-based system, a bit old-fashioned. It's now like a credit card system and a sort of chip and pin approach to things. And we think that will go from strength to strength. But I think importantly, what it shows is that that we can work together. You know, at the end of the day, Blackpool isn't a theme park. It doesn't have one owner. It doesn't have one set of car parks, one set of hotels. There's all sorts of businesses in here, but we have to try and operate like that in order to compete with the competition.
I mean, I think the idea came out of, you know, a lot of our visitors to Blackpool have been there, you know, and the whole Orlando operation is a very slick operation.
Yeah.
So on the back of that, you know, customers might go for 2 weeks over there, they'll come here to Blackpool, and for, you know, a long weekend, 4 or 5 days, they can plan a visit exactly like that.
Yeah.
So, we're sort of hopefully beating the customers' expectations.
And Blackpool is, I mean, I'm used to sort of theme parks that put in one hotel and call themselves a resort. Blackpool is a true resort, isn't it?
You know, absolutely.
With a lot to offer. Nick Ian, as attraction operators, how does the resort pass work for you? Does it cannibalise your existing sales? Or?
Well, the pass that Alan mentioned, that you can buy, which is Merlin's Attractions plus Pleasure Beach at £55, is the biggest selling ticket. It's almost 50% of a saving, and we're selling about 15 to 20,000 of those a year.
Yeah, and I think it will grow and grow.
So. Yeah, yeah. And just how has business been this season for you all?
Like everything in Britain, last year we had one of the best good weather summers for a long time. And this year the weather hasn't been as good as last year. So last year was a great season. This year has been a good season because the weather hasn't been as strong.
Yeah.
That's for us, which is predominantly outdoor.
Yeah.
But the weather is what drags people to the coast. I don't know what Ian would say.
No, we had a slow start to the year because the weather was so pitiful for the first few months. And then since Easter we've seen numbers pick up and pick up. We've seen the train volumes increase, car park volumes, tram volumes increase during that period. And then, of course, through September, we've seen a bit of an Indian summer, which has really helped the resort. And we've had international firework competition throughout September, which has really benefited off the back of the good weather.
Yeah.
And we've seen good volumes coming in on Friday nights through the weekend. So that's been really helpful. And then, of course, October, that we're looking forward to now has the busiest week with half term. It's a huge week and sort of the finale to the season and the end of the illuminations. So I'm sat here quite positive at the moment.
But is your feeling that if everything was perfect, if the weather was sunny every day like it is today, that the potential's there and people do want to come?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was in, this year we had the air show. And the amount of visitors that brought in was just phenomenal. Mm. I haven't seen crowds like that for such a long time. And we've had the fireworks every weekend again. It is gaining in popularity, and it's just fantastic to see.
And I think one of the things we talked about earlier, the resort pass, is that when you sell a multiple ticket like that, which has a shelf life of up to 3 months, it allows people to, you know, pick and choose what attractions they go to. So, for instance, if the weather's perfect, people will come to the Pleasure Beach. If it's raining, they might come to the Tower or Madame Tussauds. But they can also go home to Manchester, Liverpool, wherever they are, and come back at another time.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, my attractions, roughly about 30% are repeat visitation, and those sorts of tickets really help the resort.
So it has a role to play as a sort of loyalty thing, really.
Yes, it does,
yeah. just tell us what we can expect over the next 12 months at your own attractions. What new things are you planning, Nick?
We have the 80th anniversary, I think, next year of the ice show.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a big event next year. We're doing more infrastructure next year, but we're planning a new ride at the moment. But unfortunately, we can't build that in 1 year because it's a huge project.
Yeah.
We are starting it.
Yeah.
At the end of the season, but it's going to take over 18 months to build, so it's going to be a pretty long project, but will hopefully be one of the most exciting rides in the world.
Good. Ian?
In the Merlin attractions, every year we invest in something new for each of the brands. I mentioned 30% of our visitors are returning, so they like to see something new. So Madame Tussauds, we always have three new figure launches, and we've got a really exciting new festival set that we're going to be launching in there in 2016. Sea Life, we're building a new Jurassic feature in there with some really strange ancient creatures in there. And in the tower, we're putting tablets, touchpad tablets into the top of the tower, which are really interactive and again just brings back that modernisation point of view. And we're hoping to launch a new branded restaurant within the tower building as well.
Well, I mean, in terms of what we're doing specifically, we will start work on the tramway extension, which will take people to the train station. Yeah. I know that's not an attraction, but it does help with the infrastructure. In terms of attractions, we've got the Blackpool Museum coming, and that's going to be very exciting inside the Winter Gardens, and that's a £20 million project, we're very excited about that. We're looking at bringing an IMAX and cinema into the town centre,
right.
So that's something that could be here next year or the year after, and we've got the future phases of Lightpool as we do use the town centre streets for more events, and we've got other events planned. We're working with a very big organisation to bring what would be our biggest event ever to the resort around about the switch on time. So touch wood, that'll come off, and that'll be very exciting.
Thanks then to our special Blackpool panel: Alan Cavill from Blackpool Council, Blackpool Pleasure Beach's Nick Thompson, and Ian Hawkins from Merlin Entertainments. Time now just to briefly catch up with Blue Loop's Charlie Reid. Hi Charlie, thanks for joining us. Now, this podcast, as you know, is all about Blackpool. You're from the north of England. You must have gone there quite a bit as a kid, I guess.
Yeah, hi Owen. We did indeed. I went almost every year to the Illuminations. We loved the Pleasure Beach, so went on Revolution countless times. And probably my earliest memory of an attraction is of visiting the extremely terrifying Doctor Who exhibition, which is on the Golden Mile back in 1974.
And there's been a lot of changes since, as I think you've just heard in the podcast. So it's time you went back, I think, Charlie.
Yeah, absolutely. I really want to see everything that's been done up there. It sounds amazing.
Yeah. And we're right in the middle of trade show season at the moment. IAPA's just coming up. We're just on our way out there as we record this. So what have you been up to at the shows?
Well, we're busy preparing meetings for next week at IAPA. We've also got our party to run on the Tuesday night, which should be fun. And we're also just getting the dates sorted for our own conferences for 2016, which are April in Dubai and then Shanghai and Liverpool in June.
That's Blue Loop Live, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
And what should people look out for on the site at the moment? What's online?
Well, there's a lot happening right now. There's a couple of things being announced in time for IAPA, I think worth mentioning. One is The Giant, which is a rather unique project. And the other is Timbalaya, which is an incredible new IP brand, which has been put together by... Well, it's basically an IP, so it will be an attraction. It could be an awful lot of things. But Nick Farmer is the creative genius behind that, so you can ask him. Another thing to mention is the California company Zeitgeist have released news about them developing a rather fantastic-looking park in Indonesia, which is a really interesting part of the world for this business.
And you can read all those stories and a whole lot more at blueloop.com. And there you go, the second episode of the podcast done and dusted. We'd love to know what you think, by the way. Guests you'd like to hear or topics covered on future podcasts, email us at bluetalk@blueloop.com. Now, we won't keep you waiting as long for the next episode, I promise that. But in the meantime, subscribe to Blue Talk on iTunes so you don't miss out.